Holy cow, I can't help myself. Every time I hear those bagpipes, makes me want to either make love or fight. And
I hope it's fight.
Obviously, you know now I've got Mr. Bobcat Goldthwait with me. I'm so honored to have you
oh,
here.
Oh, thanks, buddy.
I hope it's the fight.
I hope it's the fight. Well, either way, I don't know. Either way, it's not going to go well for me. I'm just gonna present.
I got you. Very good. Holy cow. It's true with those bagpipes. You know, the bagpipes, not that you've ever wanted to know this, but they're a war instrument.
Sure.
And there's two tenors and a bass drone, big sticks, right? And that tone that those are on, it hits the mind at a tone where it makes you afraid. And the chanter, where the rhythm and the tune itself comes out is like left flank, right flank, whatever, surrender.
Right.
You know, run away, run away.
Well, bagpipes is a weird instrument because, it's not like any other instrument where you're blowing and then it comes out. You're actually continually filling this bladder, which is really weird, and then manipulating that. You know
what I'm saying? It was goat stomach in the very beginning.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and what you had to do, you got the goat stomach and then you had to season it so the pores would get closed. Otherwise, you were doing a lot of huffing and puffing.
A lot of huffing and puffing.
Yeah, like I got those four kids that way. A lot of huffing and puffing.
Now, how old were you when you started playing bagpipes?
You're not. Holy cow. You should do one of these.
Oh, really? No, but like, what would draw a kid to that instrument? It is. It's not like you meet a lot of chicks, you know. No one at a party says, "Hey, Roddy,
bring your bagpipe."
Yeah, but you know, it's a real panty dropper. Is Amazing Grace.
I'm a panty dropper. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you.
You know, so all these guys are sitting around with folk guitars, doing Simon and Garfunkel, and then you come in, wah, 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 wah.
You know, I can only pick it up about 8 years old, 9 years old.
Wow.
I've seen one picture of myself as a baby, and the first thing you get is a chanter. Mm-hmm. Because it's the second hardest instrument in the world to play. There's eight notes, but there can be 16 movements in one bar. And, the scales are so complicated, you have to learn from a chanter. And when you get your bagpipes, that's a big deal. That's like, like if you're Jewish and what's that when you become a man?
Yeah, your bar mitzvah.
Your bar mitzvah. I have not had one.
Well, so but you know I.
I'm waiting.
I used to direct the Jimmy Kimmel Show.
Yes.
But in much people would be surprised about that. Anyways, you know, it's like, you know, the guy who's banned from the other talk shows for setting them on fire and stuff. He's our director, so ABC really didn't promote that. But despite my persona, I'm very quiet when I'm working. We work together, you know. Yes. I'm not a loud mouth, and I had an Irish whistle that I would play over the headset when it was too much static.
Nice.
I would just kind of, a little Danny boy, and everybody would shut up because it was painful. So the crew chipped in and bought me bagpipes, and it was the hardest thing to wrap my brain around. I mean,
it's really difficult because you got to keep the pressure in the bag going.
Yeah,
you have to tune the two tenors and the bass drone, and they all, pardon me, all got a link with the chanter. It's four woodwind reeds in it.
Yeah,
you know, it's just like,
it's like playing four flutes that you're not blowing into.
Yes, yeah, you're only blowing into one place, and that does nothing.
It's a little bit like playing an electric keyboard that you're responsible for an extension cord that keeps running.
You forgot it.
Yeah, yeah, it's a terrible instrument. It's really impossible to play.
You've been Wait a second. If you're like, it doesn't matter if you're Gandhi, if you're Michael Collins, if you're Ronald Reagan, at your funeral,
there's
bagpipes.
Sure, but and there's no way, there's not a dry eye in the house.
No, except you, of course.
Yeah,
going like, when can I get the hell out of here?
The guy who's
passing
out.
Piper.
Yeah, No, I remember when my mom passed away, and no one told me bagpipes were coming, and this guy just comes over the hill in the graveyard, and it's the waterworks, so, you know?
It is. It's made to hit those, know, those receptors in that.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't have many pictures as a kid, and just like you said, I was on an Indian reservation called the Paw Six. I can't imagine me going, I want to do that.
Yeah.
You know, or put some war paint on me.
I'm sure with the native people, they really love the bagpipes.
That's the other thing.
At a powwow.
You know, and I was always told that I saw a parade and said, I want to do that. But I found out recently in, you know, trying to find out anybody that would claim me that, that wasn't necessarily the case. And I come from a long line of, like, for instance, my great-great-whatever was Secretary of State to Jefferson Davis. And I come from a line, I'm just the only rebel of the whole bunch of them.
Yeah. Well,
you know?
Clearly that's a little bit antisocial as a tiny, tiny boy.
You just...
That's really...
You just agreed so quickly with that.
Well, yes. I mean, it is very weird that you gravitated to that instrument.
And you know what? Like, by the time I was 12, I was picked to play for the Rose Bowl Parade out of, they needed 50 out of the world. And I just had so much practice. The other thing I would do is I'd steal meat pies. I loved meat pies.
Right.
And when they have these contests over the weekend, they have what they call a Cayley, which is the big blowout Saturday night, you know, every Scotsman drinking. And so I remember this one time in the cardboard boxes were these meat pies, but they'd never let me in because I was too young. And so boom, I snuck up and I grabbed this huge, beautiful box of meat pies, and I went to take off, and it's a tent, and the ropes of the tent, and I went right over, and meat pies are sliding in there, ladies are going down. Well, your punishment is, during the competitions, there's like this sword dance, ladies do the Highland Fling, well, they need a bagpiper. You play it all damn day. Well, what happens then is you get really damn good at them.
So tell me about this when you were at did you say the Rose Bowl?
Rose Festival Parade.
Okay. And what I'm interested in is when did you get the juice? You know what I mean? Like that crowd going nuts. Did you get it back then?
Yeah.
It's crazy, right? Because I got nuts. That when I was like six from a big auditorium and they went nuts.
Tell
me
what you did.
Oh, I was, I tumbled. I did like a little routine. But
I just want to visualize.
Yeah,
it.
Yeah, me do it. But here's the thing: it was because I was a fat kid that the crowd went ape. You know, they went nuts because this is little fat boy, you know, doing these kips, these flips and stuff. Yeah, yeah. And I just thought, man, I'm really good. But it was just really funny to see this little fat kid.
Okay, let me tell. I haven't shared this with anyone because I just found out about it. You know, as your people pass on, and you know, you're left, etc. I found this out. When I was 6 years old, I was in this Indian reservation, the Paw, Thepas, Manitoba. And they put me in a singing contest, but not a singing contest of kids, a singing contest, you know, of the whole rock and roll. And I had a sister, and I've just learned this. My sister told me, listen, Roderick, I'm going to be at the back of the room with my hand, just sing to my hand. And I came in second.
Wow.
Now, you
who
know.
Who was number one? Paul Williams.
Paul Williams.
I'm trying, who beat you? Where's that guy now?
Where's that guy?
Where's that guy?
Yeah, but I've never had a problem in front of a camera. You've seen me socially. I'm not.
No,
I suck.
We have that similar thing. I think folks would be really surprised on how quiet we are when we're not when the mic's on, when the camera's on. We tend to bring it, but
yeah.
But in real life, we both kind of we mumble.
Big
We've
time.
Had some of our finest conversations.
I never,
completely inaudible.
And I had no trouble understanding you, nor do I.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, just, but it is strange, you know. And when you were singing then, did you belt it out? Were you really loud?
He's like, once there was a mousie with a piece of cheese. Snap went the trap, and there went the cheese, something, something, something. But now, get this, Bob. In my business of professional wrestling, one of the things that's most feared by the young guys coming up is doing an interview. And I didn't I just have never had any trouble, never wanted to be in front of a camera, but never thought about it. But you know what I've been doing all these years? I've been looking at her hand. And didn't, you know, and I, when I go back and think about it, I don't see anybody.
Yeah.
I don't see anybody in the arena when I come in. I seem to have to be able, I can go someplace.
Right.
It's her hand.
That's pretty, that's fascinating. Now,
let's move on.
No, it is. It is. It is. I have no idea.
You're killing me here.
No, but I have no idea. I mean, I have an idea when I get done that I did well or okay, but I never know. I actually really don't know how well I did one way or the other. You know,
yeah.
I always, and it's not me fishing for a compliment afterwards going, hey, did I do well? It's truly like, you know, I go, oh, I did do well, you know? It's really strange. And I don't think it's my self-loathing either. It's like, I think when I'm doing it, I'm in such a panic to deliver that I'm not really thinking about
the
laughs or the applause or the boos or anything, you know.
You know, I was going to do a set at the Comedy Store, and I was talking to you, and you said to me, just talk fast.
Yeah.
You remember?
Yeah.
You know, obviously, I'm not the greatest comedian in the world, but it worked.
Well, the other night I went up to La Lucha Vavoom, and so I
wanted to come so bad.
I know, and I was and so I just thought, you know, I'm not gonna. It's mayhem there, and so I thought, well, I'll be the heel, you know. So I came out, and they introduced me, and I came out, and I'm kind of being stuffy, and I will, you know, they go, oh, you're in Police Academy, and you know, and that character, you do that voice, and I go, well, you know, I'm a director now, and I keep going on, and they go, come on, you guys want to hear the voice, and I'm going, well, that's not going to happen, man, you know, I'm a serious filmmaker, and the crowd's getting really mad.
And you're a lucha libre, right?
Yeah, and finally, I just go, you know, I'm not about to do that voice for a bunch of dumb wrestling fans, you know, and so now they're all, like, booing, and I got them really, I don't think there wasn't an ass in the seat. They were all standing up, giving me the finger and screaming. And I go, especially I'm not going to embarrass myself in front of a bunch of dumb wrestlers, you know. And so then,
that works.
And then
good.
Little Cholo comes out. He's a wrestler, we do a bit, and then he puts me in a headlock, and he goes, apologize to the fans. And then he goes, do it in the voice. So
you had to do it in the voice?
So I do the voice.
They loved it.
And you know what was great? One was I had never been booed like that, and I realized, oh, this feels just as good as laughs and cheers.
Better.
Especially with the crowd. Yeah, and especially with the crowd. You know, it's funny. I shouldn't say I haven't been booed like that. I have been booed like that. But you know, we were talking before I got on. You know, Ron Williams was my good friend. And one of the things he and I discussed was, you know, I said, you know, you want the whole world to love you. And I'm not so interested in that. I just want them to know, to listen to me. You know? And I said, your form of neuroses is way more lucrative. You know? It's not so lucrative to, because we would do shows together, you know, and people would go, oh my God, Ron Williams showed up. And then they would say, and then Bobcat Goldthwait came on, and you know what he said, you know, and that almost meant more to me, you know.
You know, down at the Olympic Auditorium, Andy Kaufman, he would go and he would do his Elvis imitation for the Police. The Police would let him in the building. Then he'd watch what I did. And then he'd take me in his van and haul me over to Melrose Improv. And he would do it. And he'd get to the point where people, it wasn't booing. They were walking out.
Yeah.
It was what we would call white heat. You know, there's red heat, that's cool. White heat, you know, you get stabbed.
Yeah, then you're worried about your safety getting in and out of the building.
Yeah.
I'm not really proud of this story, but I'll give you an example of white heat. I did a bunch of dates touring with Nirvana. And I actually genuinely feel bad. I don't think I would say this now. But I was opening for Nirvana in Chicago, and Michael Jordan had retired from basketball. And none of us really even knew what was going on. But when we drove into town, there's all these signs, you know, Michael, we still love you. And we're going, what's going on? And they had to have explained to us because it's really the drama club. It's not a bunch of jocks. And so I get out there, and I'm doing okay, actually. And then I say, you know, hey, I feel bad for Michael Jordan, but for $4 million a year, $40 million a year, I'd shoot my own dad in the head. And there was this noise in Chicago, and it wasn't even a boo. It was just... It was like, kill him, get him.
Yeah, hang him.
And in order to get me out of the building, they had to actually... There was more people waiting to beat me up backstage than there was to meet
the band.
How
did you feel about that?
Oh, I just thought it was funny, you know. And I just said, you know, F you. I'll keep talking. You'll never see Nirvana. Keep booing me. You know, I just kept... And the only person laughing was Kurt. I remember walking by him, and he's like, I can't believe you said that. So they had to put a towel over my head.
Nice.
And my feet never hit the floor. The bouncers just threw me in the van, you know.
And got you out of there.
Yeah, but that was really... Now, what kind of guy was Andy? I was always nervous to meet him because he was a big influence on me, but I was always nervous that you know, heaven forbid, and I know he's dead, but you know, you don't want to meet your heroes because it's so disappointing sometimes.
Yeah.
And I know Andy would never break character, so that just seemed like a big drag to me.
Just before we get out, the way we got out of Madison Square Garden every night is we put Bobby Orton, Ace, and myself in the ambulance. And woo!
Right.
And then we come to the Ramadama on 52nd. Mm-hmm. You know, it would stop, the lights would go off, the back doors open, Bobby and I would come out with our bags, cowboy hats, go to the bar, and you know, another night begun.
Yeah. It is that weird line when you're the heel and you get the crowd so mad. Sometimes I think that the audience appreciates it because you're part of the drama, you're part of the story, so they're excited that you're not disrespecting what they're about. So
yeah.
I think they appreciate that. But then we all know that there's fans that take it a little too far.
I've been stabbed 3 times.
By fans?
Last time
I
from the
heart. We're using the term fan loosely. I don't know if that's
really
a fan.
Yes, of course, by 3 fans.
By fans.
My
fan. He loves me so much.
He
stabbed me in the heart. That's not really a fan.
You know, when for dinner, like you figure it this way. Everybody, you know, you do 4 weeks of promos for, we'll pick your town, Poughkeepsie. I used to fight in the, not Poughkeepsie, Pico Rivera. I used to fight in the bar in Pico Rivera. And you do like 4 weeks of interviews for Pico Rivera. Well, by the time he got there, and Pico Rivera is a wonderful place, just a bunch of Hispanics drinking Corona.
But you talk so much smack.
Oh! And what they'd do is they'd put their knife, they'd get a box of popcorn, and they'd put the knife up into the popcorn.
Wow.
And then when you came back, they swiped back into the popcorn, and then the crowd would close off.
Wow.
Oh,
wow.
Many a night. But so going, I got to take a break now. Okay. I'll take a quick break and come back because we got to talk about Andy Kaufman, how to save the world. God bless America. We'll be right back with the one and only Bobcat Goldthwait. God bless. TrueCar.com is changing car buying forever. Yes, every day, True Car users receive negotiation-free, guaranteed savings. Some features not available in all states. In the first 6 months of this year, over 275,000 cars were sold by the True Car Certified Dealership Network. True Car users save an average of $3,201 off MSRP. When you're ready to buy a car, you just follow 3 easy steps. First, go to TrueCar.com and find out what other people paid for the car you're looking for. Then, register at TrueCar.com and see upfront pricing information and lock in your savings. The third step is simple. Just print out True Car Savings Certificate and take it to the True Car Certified Dealer for a better, hassle-free car buying experience. Remember, every day, True Car users receive negotiation-free guaranteed savings. Save time, save money, and never overpay. Visit TrueCar.com today. That's TrueCar.com. I love them, too. I love them. I'm not kidding. Bagpipes play, and it picks my spirit up right away. And away I'll go. I'm honored to be with Bobcat Goldthwait in Piper's Pit Pod. You know, I just need to tell you this. This is the way that we keep things free. And the fact that we can get talent like Bobcat to come on and speak with you people. And it's because of Amazon. It's a proud sponsor of Piper's Pit Pod. And, you know, they help me do this for you every week for free. So I need your help. I've got, like, Heidi Fleiss has nothing on me, okay? My youngest girl's in her second year of college. I need college money, all right? So this is what you do. When you need to buy something, only when you need to, okay? And it's Christmas coming up, you're going to need to. What you do is you go to Podcast One. That's O-N-E, Podcast One. And you just click podcastone.com. Okay, and what that does is it says a little banner, keep our podcasts free, and you'll see a little Piper's Pit. You push that Piper's Pit right to Amazon. Buy whatever you need, and Amazon, because you did it through me, gives me 50 cents back. My youngest, she got a sandwich for school. That's a pretty cool way to get it, and it really helps me out. So here's the thing again, because I'd need it twice myself. What you do is you click on Keep Our Podcast Free banner at the top of the page, and then click on Piper's Pit, longest running show in the history of wrestling. Not sure what kind of a brag that is, but I'm going to take it. And then you don't have to buy nothing special, just like something really expensive, so I get a lot of money from it. And it doesn't cost you nothing extra for them diamonds. And then you do your regular shopping, go home, and it keeps it all right, fair dinkum for everybody. So I hate talking about myself and having to do those things, but it's the way of the world. And I got four of the most beautiful children in the world, and October the 12th, I've been married 32 years. I'm 0-45 with her.
Same woman?
Same woman, yeah. And not once...
Because I may have 32 years,
but, no, but we never spoke about divorce once. Murder, but yeah, never. Yeah. So Andy Kaufman, you never met Andy.
No, I never met him because I know that he was squirrely and I didn't want to be disappointed.
Oh well. That he was squirrely.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you didn't want to be.
Yeah, yeah.
Didn't you light the Kimmel stage on fire?
No, it was the Tonight Show. But yeah,
the Tonight Show.
Yeah. Welcome back to Pot Calling Kettle
Black.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you, Andy Kaufman. To my knowledge, he never drank.
No,
he never smoked.
No,
nothing. He loved chocolate mousse pie.
Yeah,
and at that time, he was working on the new Dick Van Dyke Show.
Sure, that's how I first became aware of him. He was on the new Dick Van Dyke Show, and my mother was like, "You got to see this guy." And I came in, and yeah, that was it. Was amazing. He would just come out and do Mighty Mouse. He would just do
yeah. It was great. Here I come.
So, how did you meet him? How did you become aware?
He Andy. Was a wrestling fan.
Yeah, always was. I mean, it wasn't like something that later in his career he discovered. It was something he always loved.
And I think that he was born on the East Coast, and the wrestling he used to watch was like Classy Freddie Blassie, because Andy did a brunch with Blassie.
Yeah.
So that era of pro wrestlers. But he had this idea. And I'll tell you one that's just, you know, I'll just tell you the truth. I got in so much trouble for this. I did an interview in the Olympic Auditorium, and I sat on a donkey that I painted like a zebra. That's the best part of it, okay? It just goes down here from here. So now I'm on this donkey, and I've got a T-shirt that says Conquistador de la Guerreros, Conqueror of the Guerreros, right? And then I got the worst looking sombrero in Tijuana I could find. And I got a stick with a string and a carrot. And so I think it's either 52 or 36. RI95171. Get your tickets now. That's whatever that was. And the owner of the station was about to throw us off the air. Rod's in trouble. And the promoter, Mike LaBelle, came down, and this was on a Wednesday. So that was our TV night. Friday was our house show night. You get in there and you apologize to those people. That, you know, I don't know what worse you could have done to me than you already are, Mike LaBelle, but it's going to be all right. And so Friday came, and there's a very famous sports announcer from that. His name was Jimmy Lennon. And he was the uncle of the Lennon sisters. And if you watch Showtime, his son, Jimmy Lennon Jr., does all the boxing and stuff. And so I used to play the bagpipes. Like, I came fifth in the world when I was 14 in grade A competition. I was the only kid there. All the rest were men. It's Cable to Fave was the name of the band. And so I said to Jimmy, I said, would you please ask these people to stand for the Mexican national anthem? Jimmy, like the God bless and great announcer he is. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, please rise for the Mexican national anthem. And they got up. And I'm not kidding you. You could have heard a pin drop. Hands over their hearts. Little babies, okay? I'm not. And honest, as he's bringing the microphone down where you move your fingers, it's called the chanter. As he's bringing him down there, I'm thinking, I'm going to die. There's no way. There's no way. And boom, I played them bagpipes up and la cucaracha, da 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 da. Oh, the seats were bolted. The seats were bolted to the cement. Are coming up, and they're coming into the. So now I got the microphone. We come back to Andy Kaufman, and I don't know how this came out of my mouth, but the thing is this: when they start coming into the ring, they all make the same mistake. They duck between the top and second rope. That's punting time.
Right.
You don't want them to get anything. Okay. I guess as I was doing my punting, I said, is there no justice? I don't know. I don't know. I needed to say something. Well, Andy just thought that was the funniest thing. So now there was underground tunnels there in the Roman Colosseum. The only way it could be saved would be becoming a church because Satan lived there. I know. Right. I lived right next to him. And finally, with the chairs and like the police full scale, woo, 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 you know, gas, boom, get them out of there. And Andy took me in his van and brought me right to
the improv.
Improv, Bud Friedman, and started doing exactly what I was, and he kept on it and on. And I'm waiting for the brilliance of the punchline.
Right, right.
You know, and just. Having lived it,
yeah,
I thought that he might have caught on. It wasn't the smartest thing to do, but no, for Rod, and he went. And I'm not kidding you. Half that improv was gone.
Yeah,
with like white heat, and Andy loved it.
It's you know what's weird though. Sometimes you do something, and you think, well, they liked it when I did this, so they're gonna like this, and they don't.
They don't.
And, yeah. I know you're touchy about God, but I'll tell you, I did a comic relief once where I dressed as Christ and did magic tricks. The amazing Christo, water to wine to water, tap the deck, and back to rice again. And
wait a second, say it again.
Remember the Marshall Bodine TV magic tricks? So it was like water to wine to water, tap the deck, and back to rice again. You know, and so I'm doing this, and I'm dressed as Christ. And there was a woman who had a sign that said, I heart Bobcat. And as I proceed to just go down in flames, much like the real Christ, you know, she's denying that she's with me. No, she's denying that she's
denying?
The poster goes down. It's like the rooster's crowing. And I walk by, I bombed so hard that night. And I walk by Billy Crystal. He's on the way out to host. And he goes, biggest balls in show business. he says to me as we pass each other.
But great. Like, that's a great compliment.
But you're like going, I think this is going to go over. And it's like, oh, man.
Yeah. And
with that wasn't one that I was doing to bait the crowd. I really thought people would think it was funny. And, man, they hated me. Oh, man, they hated me.
I don't know which one of us we've had them hate more.
I think it's you. But you know, I mean, it's only occasionally I cross the line in physical. The other night I was in Roanoke and.
It's Roanoke?
And this woman's going, it's my birthday, blah, blah, blah. And she's interrupting the show, and she keeps interrupting the show, and I deal with it. And then it gets a little ugly, and this guy's like, I was out smoking. And this guy goes, go out and smoke. And I go, that guy is terrible. He wishes you had cancer. I only wish the best for you. And so the husband.
That's what you said to her when you went out?
Well, the husband's yelling at me. Everybody's. And so they finally get the bouncers, and they're taking this whole party out. And just as they're about to leave the door, I go, happy birthday. And the whole crowd starts singing happy birthday. Boom. She comes, breaks away, and comes up on stage.
Breaks the line, right?
Yeah, she made it to the stage. And I know as a comedian, you know, you got to back away and make sure there's air between you and them.
Zone.
Yeah, because if there's no air and then someone shoves and then it's a lawsuit. And it's just,
yeah.
But this isn't the kind of stuff Jim Gaffigan worries about. This isn't the kind of stuff most comedians worry about. Having the zone.
Yeah, they don't. I bet you they don't.
They don't.
These days, and I got, first thing I need to say is this, at the Comedy Store in Sunset Boulevard, all the comedians there have been so gracious to me. And I even got my name up on the wall.
Right.
But I don't deserve it. You deserve it.
Well,
but it's just, you know what? It was one of those really sweet. And I got up there every night at 2 o'clock in the morning. Thank you to our pal, Sal and Jimmy Kimmel.
Yeah, but that's what you have to do. You got to go up.
I was trying to do a Broadway show. They got me doing stand-up. Talk about ruin me for life.
It's a good, yeah, I know. It derails you.
A little bit.
If you become a good comedian, it almost derails you from other things in a weird way.
Like your actual feelings.
It's similar to wrestling in the fact that it's you're really in the moment, you know. I mean, I always respect wrestling because it's the idea that you're doing this performance while you're physically getting injured. You know, if you're on a set, right, and just imagine one tiny thing happened to the lead actor, you know, we would stop production. You know, the director wouldn't say, what are you doing? Just keep going.
Yeah, absolutely.
Say your lines.
Yeah, I bleed a little. They'll love it. You know, I was doing a show called The Highlander, and the television show.
Right.
And so, I think the star's name was Adrian something. And if you've been to Vancouver, Canada, there's a roller coaster made out of wood as you're coming in that just stays up all year round. So, he had a samurai sword. They gave me a claymore, which is a two-handed sword from Scotland. But of course, they wanted me to use one hand. Now, the coach, fencing coach was a guy, Bob Armstrong, an old timer from England. And, you know, I'd had like an hour and a half lesson. So now they want me to back up the hill of the roller coaster while using the claymore with one hand, you know, and I'm trying to remember parry, thrust, all that.
Right.
So Adrian, you know, sometimes when, you know, guys, they react to wrestlers different. They want to.
They want to get butch.
They want to get butch.
They want to show that they're not
they
babies.
Up.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so this guy, I'm trying so hard. And this guy started going, well, come on. Come on. A third one. Come on. Wah! Right to the guard of the fucking, right to the guard of the samurai sword. Cut his finger half off. They had it now set.
Yeah.
Shut down.
Yeah.
Rod, what are you doing?
Yeah.
You know, I would have got an award if I was in wrestling.
Yeah. But, yeah. Yeah. Well, that's the thing, you know, and so to me, it is really the hardest form of performing, period.
It's difficult.
You know, it's not asked of other performers to continue the scene while you're physically hurt.
Yeah, it's, you know, you
not get, only are you not, it's not, it's expected. It's insane.
There's some things that comedians, stand-up comedians, and wrestlers have in common, quite a few actually. Neither one are employed.
You're supposed to deliver the show no matter
no
what.
No matter what.
No matter what. And it's not even, but it's not even like, the audience and the promoters don't even consider for a moment that any of this stuff would be bad for the show. You know?
They're just
like, sometimes I'm going out in front of a crowd and I'm like, and they're out of their minds and I'm like, how can I cheer these people up? You know what I'm saying? Like, that's my job.
See, yeah, but you don't know until you go out. For instance, I hate pyrotechnics. I hate music. I hate that. Cause like, when I come out, I gotta feel where you're at.
Yeah, that's the same here. Like, I always ask not to go out to music.
Please don't.
And they never understand that. You know, they it's like, I don't need the crowd to get up. You know, my job is to get them up.
Yes. And like, if I go out there and there's like a really good buzz going, I'll probably start on a one or a two. If I go out there and they're sitting on their hands, I might start on a five, bring it to a three, back to a seven, back to a four.
No, I understand that 100%.
I know you do.
Yeah.
And it's, you get a master's in crowd psychology.
Yeah, this idea of like, you know, they go, please, you know, and all this hype, and then you go out. It's like, no, that's how I should be leaving.
That's how I, yes.
That shouldn't be, you know, don't dig me a hole. Like, how am I going to get, you know, I need to bring them up, you know?
Yeah, how am I going to get out of here? Sometimes, when I was at the comedy store, you know, there, if somebody had a good set, the next guy was a little hesitant coming up.
Oh, sure.
Where in our business, if somebody had, we'll just call it a set, had a good set, couldn't wait to get there so you could steal and harvest it. You know?
Right. Well, I always, you know, I never had a problem. I shouldn't say it that way. But I never psychologically had a problem going on after anyone. I always thought it was funny. I didn't care. Like, you know, whoever that person was, that'll be a challenge. You know, I'll go on after, you know, the different acts and, guys that people would never follow because it made it funny to me. You know, I started when I was 15, you know, and I got on Letterman when I was 20. Yeah. So eventually what happens is you're going, okay, I know how to do this. Now what can make this interesting for me?
I'll play Cucaracha.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. Exactly.
I know it's not on the playlist, but well.
It is interesting that the comedians. I guess, but I shouldn't include all comedians. I do think I've always been more interested in getting a reaction than being loved. You know, I don't. I always feel like in real life I have enough friends.
You have friends?
I do. I have one friend. I have Tom Kenny. Huh. My buddy Tom Kenny, I should mention, he's SpongeBob SquarePants. I don't want to name drop.
Cool.
But we've known each other since we were 6 years old.
Was that SpongeBob? What sponge drop?
Sponge scratch gold pants. No, it's Gold Bond. It was Tom Kenny's SpongeBob SquarePants, and he does a lot of other voices. He's on Adventure Time.
I've done a show.
But we've known Tom. We met each other in first grade. We went to Catholic school, and there was this nun that was my teacher. We weren't in the same classroom, and whatever I did, I made her cry. And so she brought me into his classroom, and she's sobbing.
You know,
and
it's
I
a representative
sobbing.
God. Just go
yeah,
ahead.
Yeah, I know. It's married to God. And
yes.
And so she just comes and she goes, I can't take him anymore, and left me in his classroom. And I was really upset. I thought I wasn't going to see my friends anymore.
That's and why you're upset.
And he thought it was really cool. I could make a grown nun cry. So he introduced himself at lunch. He was like, who is this guy?
Is that your first, like... the first time that you were ever introduced kind of to that art?
No, because I wasn't, you know, I really wasn't trying to make this woman cry. I just...
just a special talent, yeah.
Well, now they probably... Thank goodness I didn't grow up when I did. You know, I grew up when I did grow up because I'm sure they would have, you know, they would have dialed me in with some Ritalin or something. You know what I mean? Like,
Can you imagine if they had spy cams back when we were growing up?
Oh, you mean for the classrooms?
No, for the road.
Well, it is weird now when you're on stage. You know, as soon as the show goes off the rails, everybody's phones go out. you know?
Yeah.
And so it's kind of...
Sucks.
It kind of robs you from, you know, you're kind of in... I stopped doing stand-up for about 5 years. And when I came back, the whole iPhone explosion had happened. And it took me a few months to adjust. And I just said, well, this is the world now. Everything gets recorded and you just have to deal with it. You know, you're not going to get people to turn off their phones. You're not going to, this is the world, you know? And I think those are the kind of lessons that you kind of have to do all the time. If you don't, you're just going to turn into an old guy, you know, yelling at kids to get off your lawn, you know?
Yeah, but when you said that, God, I lost my – what did they do to you? I lost my train of thought, and it was important.
I don't know.
There you go.
But you know this. I mean, you know, there was a time when you did a show, and if someone asked you for your photo, it was someone who brought a camera.
Got it. Yes. And so I'm doing a show. A stand-up. I'm not a stand-up comedian. I tell them how great they are all the time, so they know that I respect and appreciate them. I'm more a storyteller kind of guy. That, you know, take about 2 hours for me to get my stuff done. But they have patience for me, you know, because right. They're not expecting me to make them laugh. How many laughs per minute and stuff. And so they, you know, they got, I get a little grace period there.
Yeah, but you get the same, you know, it's something you earned. And also, if you think about the great comedians, they are storytellers. You know what I mean? They've already done their time. So they've had to go up in front of crowds that didn't know who they were and deliver a punchline every 60 to 90 seconds. So I don't think that's putting what you do down, you know?
Interesting. Where was the first time you performed?
I started doing stand-up when I was a kid, and I would do it. We were like in punk band, so I got thrown out of a band called the Dead Ducks. So then I just started doing stand-up in between the bands, garage bands, when we were kids, and we'd play in a church and stuff like that, and I'd be in the basement doing stand-up. And then I got doing stand-up, like really getting $20 going on stage. It was a club outside of Syracuse in Skinny Atlas, New York, called the Old Stone Mill, which is interesting because the guy who put me on that night is the guy who I'm finishing up a documentary on. He's a fascinating man, so that's my last movie. I'm still in the middle of it, kind of, but it's a documentary on a guy named Barry Crimmins, who's just Barry a fascinating Crimmins. Guy, a political satirist, but he has his own story about dealing with his... And it doesn't sound that... it sounds like something you might not want to rush out and see, but it's him dealing with child abuse as an adult, you know? And the fascinating thing is through making this movie, you know, I'm not like a guy who beats a drum for causes, but it's so fascinating to run into all these adult men who it might be the last thing that we don't talk about, you know? So it's great to see this guy who's this tough guy, who's a fascinating guy, talking about it, his child abuse and the help. He's helped so many other people afterwards through it. And in Holy fact, God. He even went and, you know, he was involved in going to the Senate and changing some laws. And this is a bar comic who turned it all around, you know? So that's the documentary I'm making right now.
And what, do you have a working title? Do you have a title?
Yeah, it's called Call Me Lucky.
You Call know, me lucky.
Because, you know, we went into the basement where he was abused as a kid, and it's very, you know, graphic. And he says, you know, and he said on camera, he goes, you know, I'm not a victim anymore. And that guy went to jail, and I'm a testimony to what you can do with your life. And I've had all these friends and all these experiences. And then he just says, you know, call me lucky.
You know what? We're going to take a break, and then I want to add something to that and see what you think of it. Ladies and gentlemen, Bobcat Goldthwait, one of my all-time favorite guys, and the fact I got him down here just thrills me to death. We'll be right back after this break.
Let's go. The all-new Rich Eisen Show.
What is it?
What is it?
Who better to tell you than Rich Eisen?
This is what we're going to have on the show. Just talking football along with music and movies and television shows, interesting things of our pop culture landscape, of which the NFL is part.
And that's all you really want at the end of the day.
The Rich Eisen Show.
Hold on a minute. This is probably my therapist.
Go to podcast1/Rich Eisen to hear every show.
Look out now. Yeehaw! I tell you, they know you're coming. They know you're coming. I'm with the great Bobcat Goldthwait. And proud to be with them. Had to turn into two shows.
Well, thanks. Now, when those bagpipes start, is that is that drums or machine gun? Are they trying to shoot the bagpiper?
Those are the tenors.
The tenors.
The tenors.
It sounds like it's got a bit of a percussion there. It's what is that?
It's snare drums.
Okay.
And that's when you're marching. Keep that beat going.
Right, right, right.
Have you ever heard of the Boy Scouts?
Of course.
Do you? Okay. Do you know why the Boy Scouts became Boy Scouts?
No.
Thank you for saying no. During the First World War, the world was kind of coming from horses. They started having tanks, mustard gas. And one of the things that over in Europe that happened was these boys, they just dug in trenches because it was just so brutal. But they couldn't communicate with them. So a guy named Lord Baden Powell, who's the founder of the Boy Scouts, because I was a Boy Scout, and would get these kids, and here's a message. Get it to the next foxhole. Here's a message. Get it. And that's the way they communicated. And they became the Boy Scouts. Now, in America, if you complete the program, the best you can do is an Eagle Scout, which is very cool. In Canada, when the king's there, the best you can do is a king scout. Well, the queen was there when I didn't, so I'm a queen scout.
You're a queen scout. All right. So is it really, is it, come on. I'm not shitting you. Is it a kilt or a skirt at this point? This is a queen scout.
See, you gotta have a lot of cojones. Jeez. I saw, you were telling me, what was the?
Tom Kenny. Yeah.
And what was the name of it? You're going to working title.
Oh,
right
the
now?
New movie is Barry Crimmins, and it's called Call Me Lucky.
That's Call Me really, Lucky.
Yeah.
So I just want to. So you were talking about child abuse, etc. Anybody that knows about child abuse and isn't reporting it, you're just as guilty yourself.
Yeah, you know that's actually the spoiler alert. That's the end of the movie. You know, he says
I just fucked up your movie, didn't I?
Yeah, no, Barry says, you know, at the end of the movie, he says, tell someone, and then he takes a beat and he goes, tell everyone, you know, and it's about trying to remove the stigma of talking about it, because that's where it gets power, you know, it lives in the darkness, you know, and that's where all the power of abuse is. So,
yeah,
it is really strange, the dude from Police Academy making a socially relevant movie. Yeah,
the one who lit the Tonight Show on fire.
Yeah.
Well, just before I get to that, how did you get to the matches? And,
to set the Tonight Show on fire?
Yeah, what was the thought process there?
You know, a lot of people think I was high when I did that, and I wasn't. I was just angry.
Well, you should have been, okay?
I should have been. Then I would at least have an excuse.
Yes.
You know, I did learn this. Because I brought lighter fluid, it made me an arsonist, because it's premeditated.
Ah.
So I was on probation for 4 years.
You're kidding me.
No, I was on probation and
okay,
you know,
come, you gotta give me a little of the setup.
Well,
that night. What happened?
Just smashed the Arsenio Hall show up pretty good the week before, and then Leno had me on immediately because it was like on the news and stuff, you know. I remember I was sitting there coloring with my daughter who was very little at the time, and the news comes on and goes, comedian goes berserk on the Arsenio Hall show. and her best friend is Lily Idol, who is Eric Idol's daughter, and she goes, my daughter goes, sometimes you act like you don't have a brain in your head. And this is, she's probably like 8. I go, well, it's just comedy. She goes, if it was comedy, it wouldn't be on the news. Lily's dad's not on the news.
It's so, not bad.
Yeah.
If it was comedy, it wouldn't be on the news.
Yeah.
Dad.
So then Leno books me immediately. And he was even like going, you know, so don't smash up too much stuff on the show. You know, and I'm like, I'm not. I'm going to light it. I didn't say that to him. So, you know, I was doing panel. That's what I think is pretty funny about that broadcast, because I actually opened the lighter fluid in my pants, and then he's interviewing me. You know, no, I think that's multitasking. And I go, you know, so he goes, you know, what happened over at Arsenio Hall? You know, what happened there? And I go, well, yeah. You know, I go, and this is where I was kind of a jerk because I go, well, it worked. He goes, what do you mean it worked? I go, well, I'm here. So.
Gotcha. So. How did he take that?
That's where he gets really mad. And when I watch the tape over again, like the Zapruder film, and he, and then I go, well, you know, I wanted to help you out. I know it's sweet.
The grassy knoll.
Yeah, the arsonist in the grass, you know, so. So I set the chair on fire, and I knew it burned clean and burned out. And I actually had a buddy standing by with a fire extinguisher in case it got nuts. But
in case it got
a little nuts.
That's
well, you know that. You know, none of this is an exact science.
No.
You know that. You have an idea. You may even have a beginning, middle, and end mapped out in your head. But you know it's not an exact science. So they cut that out of the broadcast where Leno was screaming at me like, you know, he gets going. He sounds like Dino and he's cursing at me. And so I get charges brought up. And, you know, when I tell the story, I usually tell a joke version where I'm like, you know, hi, I'm Bobcat Goldthwait. If you ever had a talk show, don't set it on fire. But I had to do a PSA. That's not what it was. It's even more embarrassing than that. It was like, hi, I'm Bobcat Goldthwait. You know, I can switch back and forth, but if you're seriously injured in a fire, it's so embarrassing. I couldn't even look in you in the eye. So the Burbank fire marshal didn't like my performance, and I had to go back and refilm it.
The fire marshal didn't like your performance?
Yeah, even the Burbank fire marshal wants to direct. You know, he's like, I need an 8, and you're giving me a 4.
You're killing me.
So I had to go, and then I was on probation. And
okay, so just a second, though. I got to understand it. So, like, did you find the can there? Or
no,
did
it was premeditated.
Oh, very premeditated.
Which was really funny because...
did you not like him?
If we really want to break it down, it wasn't a question of liking Leno. It was a question of two things. One was I suddenly was on The Tonight Show and I resented it because my ego was not very healthy. And I was like going, you know, they should have always had, you know, this grandiose thinking, you know.
And I got that.
And then the other thing, which is weird, was, you know, I made it up until that point. I made my career making fun of other people. And now I was given the keys, you know. They were going to accept me to regular TV, was going to have me on a regular basis. And that was scary because that meant now I had to put up, you know. I couldn't be the guy.
Was it scary because you had a responsibility now?
Yeah, now I had to actually. So who am I if I'm not tearing down other people? I got to actually make something. I have to be something. I have to make a product. And I think that fear made me implode. But that's, you know, that's, I do know this, though.
But just a second, so you don't, you're skirting over it, Bobby.
No, but I was at a point in my career, too, where I was being booked on a lot of shows, but I was just becoming, like, I was, like, more infamous than I was. I wasn't making anything. I was becoming a personality. I was, like, having Monty Rock on or you know, I'm trying to, you know what I mean? Like, I was Tiny Tim or something, you know?
And through the tube.
Yeah, so I was like, I'm not happy just being known.
And those shows don't pay no money.
No, they don't pay any money.
So you get real famous broke.
You get famous, you're well known, and at the byproduct is I wasn't making anything, you know. I think, you know, there's a big shift in me when I started getting behind the camera, when I started writing my own movies. You know, I think, like, the movies I make, if you want to see how I see the world, you see them in the movies almost more than in my stand-up. You know, I'm very honest about this is how I see things, you know.
Boy, do you ever. And I bring that to God Bless America. But I got to know, I'm not letting you go on this part. Okay, so it's... 1 o'clock in the afternoon. What time do they do the Leno show?
Yeah, they do it at 4.
4, okay. So it's noon. Bobby's woke up and...
You know, I never really told the real story. You want to know what it was?
I was
flying in like on a red eye.
Got it.
And I was talking to this guy I didn't even know. And we were just talking about...
Were you drinking?
No. And I just said to this guy on this flight...
Things at you, Bobby.
No, I don't have an excuse. And it hit me. I go, I think I'm going to set the show on fire tonight.
Just talking to this total stranger.
Total stranger, and he thought it was a funny idea. Maybe it was one of those fans that stab you.
Yeah.
Yeah. He thought it was a pretty solid plan.
And he knows, of course.
He had my back.
Yeah.
Hey, what about Stan on the flight? He thought it was a good idea. So, the car's taking me to the set, taking me to the Tonight Show, and I actually say to the driver, I go, hey, can you pull over? And I go into 7-Eleven and I buy lighter fluid.
Because Bobby thought, or rather,
the guy
George
on the plane thought it was a solid
plan.
Plane
guy, yes.
It's a guy I never met or
couldn't
seen
miss.
Since.
Yeah.
And then, and then I set it on fire. But
okay, wait. So where do you put the
I put it in my back pocket, and I opened it up. And so while he's interviewing me, I'm
so
actually with my butt cheeks. No, I'm actually squeezing it out. I'm telling you, that was the skill. Like, I'm kind of being witty while I'm dousing the chair with my butt, you know.
So your butt squeezing
a little bit like playing a bagpipe.
No, it's not.
Yeah,
Bobby.
It is because I'm squeezing it while I'm doing the other thing. So I'm playing him like a fiddle, and I'm squeezing lighter fluid onto the seat of the Tonight Show.
Okay, so now we've got the problem of to light. There's got to be a combustible
force. Oh, so I had
force.
Yeah, I had a lighter with me,
but it was in the seat you were sitting in.
No, the lighter was in my hand. It was even worse. I actually had it this was terrible. It was actually again, you know, this is an exclusive. It was actually taped to my arm.
Not the rifle.
Lighter, because I didn't want to be fumbling
The rifle's
around.
Next. The lighter. The lighter's okay. So you've got a tape to the arm.
Yeah, because
John
I thought,
Wilkes
like,
Booth and
yeah, if you go to fumble, it's going to be embarrassing.
Of
you
course.
Know? You don't want to look an idiot. You don't want to look stupid when you're sending the Tonight Show on fire.
No, I'm gotcha.
And he's like saying, what did you do over there at Sidney Hall's show? And I said, well, I know it sweeps, and that's why I'm here. So I thought I'd set your chair on fire. So I turned around, and I actually gave it another squirt when I lit it on fire. And it's funny because Lauren Hutton was the guest, and she just put it out with a cup of water. But it did burn pretty good. When I saw the footage, I was like, holy crap. But the funny thing is like, you know, the whole thing was, what if something happened to Lauren Hutton? And in reality is I went out to dinner with Lauren Hutton that night. It was
everything was tickety-boo.
Yeah, everything was fine. Everything was fine.
So, okay, what?
The police report's really funny because they describe how did what did they call me? You know, the
arsonist.
But it was the subject. You know.
Yeah, comedian.
No, it was like it wasn't. You know, the suspect or something like that. How did the suspect enter? And
allegedly.
And they were like limousine. How did I get there? Limousine.
Gotcha.
They supplied me the limo.
Okay. So now, boom, the chair goes up. Bang.
Yeah.
The gal, you know.
She puts the water out.
Boom,
I slip actually on the water and land on my ass. But that never came up in court.
I'd love to see that.
You know, the footage doesn't exist. NBC just pulled it. You know, you can only
Serious?
See. Yeah, it just doesn't exist. You could see like a little bit of it on Larry Sanders, but outside of that, it doesn't exist. And then, that was the one thing. It's like the attorney, I just thought I'd plead no contest. And my attorney, when we get there, she says, plead not guilty. And I'm like, I saw the footage.
I'm
pretty sure it's me. Not unless there is a third arsonist in the grassy knoll. I might be going down on this one. So,
saw the footage. I'm relatively sure.
I think that's me.
That could be.
I'm pretty sure. It is from the back.
Oh, jeez. So, okay, just hang on now. So, boom, butt cheeks, boom, fire, water. Now, who's, did they attack? Are you boomed
no,
out on your
bum? I just sat there. No, I just stand there, and Leno comes around, and he pushes me in to sit in it, and he does the rest of the interview. It's really horrible. And then he yelled at me a lot while the credits roll.
Okay, so how much long? I can't believe this.
I have apologized to the guy because you know it wasn't really.
Do you think that's going to help?
Well, no, it wasn't like about like I didn't apologize because I was like, oh, I got to get back in the Tonight Show. It was just a mean thing to do to a guy. You know, it was really aggressive. You know,
yeah. Did you have any like? Any task with him before?
No, I kind of didn't.
Just was a good spot to flex your bug cheeks.
Yeah, I can't say that I was like buddies with him. I knew the guy, and I always just thought Jay was different because, you know, Jay and there's a certain group of comedians who worship the joke telling kind of thing. And if you're not doing that, then you're not really a comic. You know?
Yeah,
So I've never been one of these guys that have, you know, I've never been so enamored with joke telling and writing because at the end of the day, I'm interested in getting an effect from the audience, or also I like a comedian who, when they get done, I go, oh, I see how he sees the world. I may not even agree with it, but I see how he sees the world.
So there's so much more to you than, take my wife, please.
Or just, you know, where the socks go in the dryer and, you know, crafting good jokes never meant anything. And so there was a little bit of Jay, I'll have to say, who was always kind of like put himself in a elderly statesman kind of position.
I can see that.
And he would give advice, and you wouldn't necessarily want advice. You know, my heroes were Groucho Marx, Andy Kaufman, Keith Moon. You know, my heroes weren't
Groucho Marx.
Yeah, you know, people who are anarchic.
Yeah,
you know,
the rebels.
Yeah, so you know, as an adult man, I wasn't really interested in hearing these things. You know,
she's just saying I could give a shit whether you booed me or cheered me or whatever you wanted to do.
Or like, you know, when you did, you know, so when you do that, that's a good bit, Nathan. You know, and it's like I don't care. You know, I'm doing something else. You know, and that's how I feel about the movies I make now. You know, I mean, they're very small, they're very independent. But they're just my deal, you know? It's not like I'm not trying to get rediscovered. I'm not trying to, you know, I know that I'm not going up against Iron Man every time I make a movie, you know?
Too much fun, one location, not enough lighter fluid. So I gotta have you back. So the way I'm gonna do that is I'm not gonna let you go. Chain the doors, and next week I'm gonna have Bobcat come back on, and I have a lot more questions to ask him, just to see what maybe I could really get away with. And all of a sudden we gotta talk about your movies. We got a lot of stuff to do. So for this week, you got Restricted Bob. You know, PG. And when you come back next week, just, you know, pack up the babies and the old ladies and see if you can handle it. I love you. This is Piper's Pit. You remember the Amazon thing? Push it. I got a kid going through college. Other than that, look out, baby. An Irish poem. For those who love us, may God bless them. For those who don't, may God turn their hearts. And if he can't turn their hearts, may he turn their ankles so we recognize them by the limp. Ah! See you next week.